And on the other line, we have Winifred Curry, and she's a PhD candidate at the...
Can you speak up, Dan?
Yes, she's a PhD candidate at University of California, the UCLA campus. And she wrote a paper that was about hypermesis gravidarum, which is a debilitating illness that is relatively rare, affects some pregnant women, and causes extreme nausea, and that's just the very tip of the iceberg. It can lead to the death of both the mother and the child. And I guess it's one of the interesting things about it is that it's only treatable by cannabis. So we have Winifred on the line with us to explain this. Winifred, could you tell us more about this illness?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Well, I experienced it with my daughter, and with my son, I had severe morning sickness, and that is, you know, vomiting and nausea, but it wasn't to the point where I was retching blood. And for my daughter, I got to that point where nothing would stay down, not even water. And so I was severely dehydrated, and I lost a lot of weight in a very short time. And that's something that many women experience. They become like skeletals with a belly, you know, when they're pregnant. And it is essentially like starving for two, because what happens is your baby will continue getting the nourishment from your body if they don't miscarry, you know, from all that vomiting. And essentially the mother suffers double. But what happened with me was I was really blessed, because I was able to learn to use cannabis, and that saved my daughter's life. It saved my life. That's
Hallelujah.
What I know. I went from vomiting blood and blood coming out of my vulva from so much pressure through the vomiting,
yeah,
to being completely functional,
yeah,
after just two puffs of it.
Wow.
And it wasn't placebo. I tried not using it three times, thinking, oh my gosh, this is just too incredible. It must all be in my head. And every time I would just start, you know, vomiting again severely the next day. So I knew it wasn't in my head.
Now when you started using the cannabis, did you get any kind of negative questioning from doctors or from family or anything that kind of, you know, there's that kind of demonization of women who use cannabis during pregnancy?
Well, there's so much stigmatism when it comes to this, and it's a shame because it is so much more natural compared to what the doctors do offer.
Mm-hmm.
I recall having approached a couple of OBGYNs, and one of them didn't even want to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up giving me literature on, you know, drug abuse and pregnancy.
Oh, no.
Completely blocked. And nurses would be fearful to talk to me about it. I did find a Taiwanese OB who actually said, listen, if it worked, great. Because this was afterwards, after I had used this, and I was in my third trimester of pregnancy, and then I ended up giving birth with a Taiwanese OB, and I disclosed to him that I had used cannabis to treat my severe hyperemesis gravidarum.
Yeah.
And he said, that's fine. We have used it for centuries in Taiwan and in China, and really no psychoactive substance goes past the placental barrier to the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually has been concluded as well by Melanie Dreher, you know, with her research and a few other researchers within the medical cannabis movement. So it was nice to know that. And then, you know, and also my own great-grandmother was a midwife in Taiwan, and I learned that she had used it as well for many of her female patients.
Wow.
Who are pregnant or were giving birth or have just given birth. It was a regular herb that was used.
Oh, that's amazing. And so there is a sort of a cultural precedent then.
Yeah, you know, and this was a complete learning process for me, because what's happened is, you know, with the Western imperialism, a lot has been taken away from indigenous cultures around the world. And I think that's very indicative of my own culture. And I had to relearn about this herb that has been lost in with my people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was used by my own great-grandmother, and I didn't discover that until later.
Wow.
Because all the information just became so censored.
Yeah.
That even my own folks, my parents were afraid to disclose this to me until actually after I had published my piece of writing, and they saw my writing in the book, and they said, well, in fact, okay, we will tell you.
Oh, my God, the hidden family secrets.
Yes.
Like some kind of witchcraft,
uh-huh.
Midwifery with a little pinch of, you know.
Right. Well, because the American doctrinization came to Taiwan, you know, just about the time when my great-grandmother started retiring from her practice.
Mm. And there's also, I remember in a previous conversation you were telling me about the goddesses of Taiwan and some... Tell me a bit more about that again.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm happy and proud to say that Taiwan is one of the few islands or lands left that's very vibrant and alive with goddess tradition.
Hallelujah.
We have goddesses of for all different things. Gods, goddesses, earth spirits, wind spirits, water spirits, everything. But goddesses are very dear to us. Our own personal ancestral goddess is Matsu. And Matsu is the goddess of the sea. She's very important to us as a goddess of healing as well. And she was also known to be a midwife. And I'm happy to say that we share the same last name, you know, Lin. And we've been goddess devotees on both sides of my family for generations, for as long as I know. And I'm glad that it's an unbroken tradition through me, because so much, I would have to say, with the colonization of our indigenous people is also comes a Christianization. And nothing against that religion, but I'm just very happy that I have my own earth mothers to turn to, because as a woman, I feel like I can really relate to a deity who's also, you know, has more of the female energy.
Yes.
Not that it should be a gender thing at all.
No, but a balance at least.
Yes.
Are any of these goddesses, any of them worship with cannabis?
Well, you see, it's one of those things, again, where a lot of the information may have been censored. And so I resort back to my genetic cellular memory and what my inner truth tells me. And so when I look at my past, it may be different from another Taiwanese person's past, because, you know, I've taken a lot of time to revision and remember and to not be afraid to really look at things. I think it is very deeply, cannabis is a very deep part of our Taiwanese and Chinese culture. I mean, for instance, my last name, Lin, the way you write it is two stalks, okay, like the two trees.
Yeah.
And then you see, you know, ma, which means hemp.
Ma, yeah.
It has the shed over the two trees, yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so my dad, you know, had told me, oh, yes, the two stalks, it just means forest. It doesn't go any further than that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, but then why is it that the word ma with the shed over the two stalks means hemp? Well, it's... Well, don't you think maybe it's the forest, the grove is filled with hemp?
Yeah,
you know, it only makes sense. And so this very same last name is associated with our goddess Matsu. And of course, I think that She used it as medicine. She used it for clothing. She used it for food. You know, it was very much a part of our original culture.
If she was a midwife, mm-hmm. then more than likely she would have used it as a healing herb for
women. Oh, yes. I mean, my dad told me that my great-grandmother used it for a woman's nausea, for a woman's labor, to, you know, as an analgesic, even afterwards to enhance appetite and promote breast milk. And it was funny to me that finally he was telling me all of this, and I'm like, why didn't you tell me this before? And uh-huh. he said, you know, it's just one of those things. If it doesn't get mentioned, the elders will never talk of it.
Probably with good reason.
Yes, because, you know, the laws became very, you know, basically when the U.S. came to Taiwan, they brought their laws with them. And so, you know, this medicine got banned as well.
I wanted to talk more, get back more to your study. It was interesting that what really caught my attention was the number of women who suffer from this debilitating illness who are on the verge of death and are being tortured every second by this disease.
Uh-huh.
You were telling me that you couldn't even barely sleep. You were vomiting continuously. You couldn't even hold water.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stories that I read in your thesis of the women who had to have her husband held her down in the doctor's office while the doctor dug out blood clots with a scalpel.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And still, there seemed to be some resistance to this one medicine that helps them, it seemed to me, from reading your... Could you tell me what your experience with that was?
Yeah, it's sad, I have to say, because when you are carrying a child inside, for some reason, our society no longer sometimes just disregards the mother and only looks at the child, which is okay. But then when the mother is suffering, you also have to address her issues. She's not just a container. And a lot of times when these women are suffering from HG, she is treated as some unfeeling container who must get tubes stuck in her, down her throat, or into her intestines, you know, so that she can receive food on one end, and then another tube coming out of, you know, another part of her intestines for drainage.
Oh.
I mean, basically, she's like a beached whale with tubes all over her. And this is without even having found a cure that actually takes away the nausea. So while she has the tubes in her, she's still vomiting. She's still having, like, the, you know, it's kind of like, have you ever experienced food poisoning? Severe food poisoning?
Hey, just like that.
Or when you're, like, when you're overly intoxicated and you're just vomiting and vomiting.
Oh, my.
That's what it's like 24/7. It's not morning sickness because there isn't a time to it. It's an all-day, all-night sickness.
Oh. And the worst thing is that instead of admitting that this natural herb could be the solution, they would prefer to torture the woman, prefer to stick tubes in, then acknowledge the fact that there is a cure that is totally...
Well, I think it's a multi-leveled problem here. One of them is, the hospital, the medical establishment is making a lot of money on all of these pharmaceuticals, on all of these very complex, very barbaric procedures. I mean, where if you didn't have insurance, oh my gosh, there's no way you could afford any of this. And so for, let's say, a country like Canada, where it's social medicine, I mean, it would save the government so much money if they were able to just let the women have their herb and let them have some peace and dignity to their pregnancy. I would love to be able to work with Health Canada and open up an HG home for women who are suffering from HG. And there's so many, and they're never, ever acknowledged because, their screams aren't really ever heard. It's always behind closed doors. And when you're retching so badly, you know, you're you're not thinking of becoming public. And then afterwards, when you give birth, you know, you're just happy to have given birth, you know? So it's something that's not addressed enough. And then these women are afraid of taking the herb because there's so much stigma and there's so much misinformation out there because they want what's best for their baby. But when they've been brainwashed for years and years, ever since they were a child, that this herb was going to deform their baby or hurt their baby in any way, of course, they have issues.
Yeah.
And not until they deprogram themselves or re-educate themselves are they going to be able to allow this medicine to work for them.
Oh, my God.
Because, as you know, with cannabis, there's set and setting.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I could just imagine, because you've been through it, like, to be able to go to these women who are suffering so badly and knowing what that suffering's like, to be able to say, look, here is a cure, here is a medicine, and just the relief that they would feel, just to be able to live and to be able to feel good about pregnancy, what a joy that would be.
And, you know, community is so important because, you know, I've worked with women over the internet and, you know, they have a hard time getting the herb, for instance.
Yes.
They have a hard time even, what's it called, knowing how to inhale it. I mean, like, for instance, for me, I was never a smoker. I had to learn to inhale it. And but when I did, it was such a relief. But I had to learn it. I mean, I didn't even know how to roll a doobie, for instance. You know, I still don't. I needed my partner to do it for me.
Yeah.
And so it's something that where you can't just say, woman, do it by yourself. You really need a community of experienced individuals to say, well, okay, let's see how much you need. Let's give you the best quality. And, you know, when you're suffering from this, you know, there's the cannabis sativa and then the indica. I found that sativa worked better and it was the cheaper stuff. And then because for some reason indica was just too potent. So there's also the different strains that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a science. And I don't think, you know, I think much too often people underestimate how much of a science it really is.
Yeah.
Can you describe for me what it felt like when you first took this medicine and the change that you felt?
Oh my gosh, I so recall this. I felt so thankful. I just because from having just been vomiting 24/7 for so long, and then to finally experience that relief, it's as if a huge burden had been lifted. It's as if all your prayers had been answered. I remember I got to, you know, I just knelt down on my knees, and instead of retching, I prayed and said thank you to my ancestral mothers, you know. I said thank you so much. And I started journaling and, you know, expressing how grateful. And I actually created a little illustrated book of this that I've never published. I just kept it to myself. And, you know, the day that I experienced relief, I started writing this.
Because you had the energy to.
And I even illustrated it with pregnant mamas, you know, and cannabis is everywhere. I've never really, you know, shown it to anybody, but it's, you know.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful. And one thing I'd just like the listeners to know, your daughter who was born and your son, or your daughter who was born when you were using the cannabis, she's beautiful and fine and pure and perfect in every way, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. She's, in fact, even more advanced than a lot of kids. I was going to UCLA while she was still, you know, but like a year old. And so she would be going to the child care center. And because it's a university campus, a lot of, what's it called, students, you know, researchers would come and observe the children.
Yeah.
And the teachers would always comment to me like, oh my gosh, the researchers were so impressed by your daughter. They were so impressed by how advanced she is, of how, like, just so smart she is, and so just wonderful in every way. And they were very taken by her. And so, yeah.
My daughter's wonderful. Yeah, right on.
Yeah, and honestly, when I was going through, see, another woman had suffered the same thing I went through, and she was one of the mothers, and her daughter was in the same class as my daughter. But she went through the whole medical route, and it was night and day. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
It was night and day.
What was her experience like?
Oh, her experience? Her experience was awful. She was hospitalized for the entire 9 months. And with tubes and anti-emesis medication that didn't really work. And her daughter was born with low birth weight. And, I mean, I think I may be biased, too, as a mother of my daughter. Who knows? But honestly, there was a difference.
Wow.
You know? Her daughter had just wasn't as grounded and sure of herself as my daughter was. That's all I know how to say without like being sounding awful.
But that's like we've got to get that out to the listeners, and especially women who are pregnant right now who are listening to the show and maybe are suffering from morning sickness or various things that cannabis.
Well, it's not even morning sickness. It's like morning sickness times a million.
No. But I mean, cannabis can be used as a healing medicine during pregnancy without any harmful results.
No, and honestly, I think even women with morning sickness who just kind of need that relief to kind of so that they don't feel like they're seasick on a boat all the time.
Yeah.
I think they deserve to have a natural herb that is everything but, I mean, is nothing but beneficial, you know?
Has no side effects.
That is beneficial in every way with no side effects. In fact, my daughter was born chubby. You know, the nurses were like, oh my gosh, she's got baby fat already. And
nice.
She was born so advanced, and right when she was born, she nursed like so strong. And here I'm also a doula, which is a, you know, someone who mothers the mother. So, you know, my research focus in my PhD is working with midwives and women who choose home births, natural home births. And so, you know, I've witnessed a lot of the birthing process and women who are pregnant and all of this stuff. And I know how much of a struggle sometimes when a baby's born and can't latch on because maybe they're not alert enough or maybe the mother is just too stressed.
Yeah.
But when my daughter was born, oh my gosh, she just latched on so beautiful and just like had the best appetite.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something just because it just totally popped into my head. But when we were at Entheogenesis last year, one of the researchers was, Ethan Russo, had finally figured out that the latching mechanism is actually based in two cannabinoid receptors in the brain.
Wow.
That the cannabinoid receptors in the brain are responsible for the latching reflex in children when they're born. For breast milk.
Right. And can I share something else with
you?
Because I've been a doula to several women, sometimes I do recommend it to them when they do struggle with nursing.
Yeah.
And believe me, it works right away.
Nice.
You know something else, too? And this is something that I found out after talking to you, Jennifer, was that Russo further speculates in another paper that that hypermesis gravidarum may be an endocannabinoid deficiency disease.
You know, it's very possible. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, because as far as I know, isn't it supposed to be like part of our genetic makeup? It's one of the, it's something we're supposed to be born with, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess essentially what he's speculating is that there's something that happens for HG, women who suffer from HG, during pregnancy that blocks their body from producing natural cannabinoids so that when you smoke it, just for our listeners to understand what that means, that you're actually replacing that something that's really naturally supposed to be there.
Well, you see, it's just, I wish more women knew about this, because a lot of times when I do try to share it with women, the common reaction is one of belittling. Like, oh, there's no way. Your HG must have not been that bad. Or, you know, just kind of like, often they will discount it. Like, because they don't, well, one, I think one reason is they don't want to admit to the fact that they suffered unnecessarily. They want to give their suffering some validation. So if they were to acknowledge that I found it a cure that worked, that, you know, it kind of discounts all their suffering. So I think a lot of women do hold on to that as well.
Well, there was an earlier attempt by the pharmaceutical companies to produce a pill that would address nausea, right? And
But no, can I share with you why that would not work?
Please.
Well, thalidomide was that pill, right? And an infamous disaster.
In the 1950s, babies were born with no arms and no legs because they came up with the pill thinking that they would get rid of the nausea and vomiting due to pregnancy for women. Right. And then, you know, now, you know, pharmaceutical companies are trying to give pregnant women, I think, maybe Marinol type medication, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's synthetic THC, and that does not work either.
No.
Because it does not auto titrate like cannabis does when you just simply inhale it. Because you can very readily gauge your own dosage.
Yeah.
And that's something else that I think is part of this, the negativity of our medical model.
Mm-hmm.
How women are not empowered to be responsible for their own medicine. That somehow you need to receive this miracle pill, this mystery pill from a doctor who is the authoritative figure who needs to control your every move during your pregnancy. How come women are not given the empowerment to be in charge of their own medicine when it could be so easy?
Oh my God, it could relieve so much suffering. Oh, I know that just tortures me, that whole idea that the medical system knows best. Even if you know that it helps with your suffering, they know better. We have something better.
Right. And it's just, and that applies not only with HG suffering women, but women in general who are mm-hmm. pregnant and giving birth. How often their own identities are put on the back burner so that they become hospital property.
Oh my God. We interviewed a woman last week, and Susan Boyd.
Yes.
Do you know her work?
Oh, yeah, she's amazing.
Anyway, we interviewed her last week, and we went through the trials and tribulations and, for me, utter horror of how pregnant women are demonized and by the medical system for using cannabis or any mm-hmm. other drugs or any, just the way that they become prisoners of the medical mm-hmm. system.
Well, yeah, I mean, midwives were the witches back in the medieval days.
Yeah.
They were the first witches who were supposed to be consorts of the devil and so forth, because they knew their herbs.
Yeah.
And then the, you know, medical establishment at the time, they were just starting, you know, to take precedence. They felt very threatened by these women.
Yeah.
And if you research the history of how midwifery became eclipsed by these male midwives who later became hospital doctors, it's just insane. They used to, these men, they used to, for instance, deliver women while blindfolded because the vulva was supposed to be so despicable and so dirty and filthy and sinful that they would not allow themselves to look at it.
And they also
and that's why forceps were invented, because the vulva was supposed to be so despicable that they would not allow their hands to touch it.
Oh my God, I can't. This gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, it's very backwards, and it's time. It's so time that we take back our bodies. We take back our birthing process, because we are the creatresses. We are the ones who bear life so that we have a future. And it is so important that as a society, we begin to honor our mothers again. Because through our mothers, men and women emerge.
Oh my God, thank you for saying that.
Excellent.
Hallelujah.
Thanks for being on the show with us tonight.
Thank you for being on the show, Winifred. I honor you as a goddess.
It's an honor for me. Huh?
We honor you as a goddess and of your lineage as a midwife and for a promoter of the herbs and of goodness and birth and just
all the
blessings.
Bravery. Wow.
And if you
it's an honor for me, and I'm always happy to share, and you know, I hope it helps. I've been a bit of a recluse because it's a lot of work being a mom, and trying to finish a doctorate, but you know, it's wonderful to have this opportunity to hopefully reach out and talk to other women.
We're going to get this out there as much as we can, because what you're saying is so important and so crucial to this change that we're going through as a culture and as a society and as a consciousness, that we'll get it out there. And if you're ever up this way, please stop by, and we have hot springs up here and wonderful lakes for swimming in. And
I would love to. Thank you.
If you ever come up, please, we will have a place for you and your kids and your partner, and we'll show you some really sweet mountain living.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's I really appreciate that. And also, you know, keep your eyes and ears out for anyone who'd be open to opening a birthing center.
We have many midwives and doulas in this area. Mm-hmm. Women who are training and women who are interested. And we're one of, this area has a huge midwifery clan.
See, that's
huge.
Wonderful. Now, I would love to talk to the midwives, because, oh my gosh, you know, they are so wise, and they're such a blessing to people, to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a lot of work, and to be a midwife is just amazing. They're goddesses.
Bless them.
Living goddesses.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. I wanted to comment that one of the things that really strikes me about your work is just the bravery of it. Just it's so amazing that if more people could speak these truths and not be...
Yeah, I know. And it was hard after, you know, I experienced my battle scars with, you know, a very police state government, you know,
mm-hmm.
With this whole using medical cannabis. While my daughter was in my womb, I experienced my scars with that. And I don't think I would have believed it if I didn't experience it for myself. Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, it was short-lived, but, you know, we were able to reach out to, you know, to people, some very lovely, lovely people, and it was sad that, you know, our club was raided and all of our literature taken. And, you know, in the USA, they really were practicing censorship. They forfeited all of our materials, our educational materials, and I found that just both sad and comical.
Mm-hmm.
That they actually could get away with that.
Yeah, it's like book burning.
Oh, yeah. And then they even took my personal journals. You know, and...
Not with the pictures in it.
That one, no.
Okay.
Because you know why? I had done the writing, and then after the whole raid and everything, I started doing the pictures.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah, but they did take some very important writings of mine that are just priceless to me, and they never returned it. And, you know, it's just who they are, and until we are able, it's an issue of, I think, domination and power, definitely.
Yeah.
Who has control? Who's able to judge? Who's able to prescribe? You know,
yeah.
The police state, the doctor state. It all has that overlay of authority.
Mm-hmm. Terrence McKenna calls it dominator culture.
Yeah. I think it's so much fun talking to you, and it's so, such powerful information. It's difficult for us to let you go, but
okay, I understand. You gotta go, well, time flies.
Thank you for being on the show and just being a brave, powerful soul.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. It's an honor.
Okay, bye, Sings.
Okay, so we'll talk.
Bye. Yeah.
Good night.
Love you. Bye. Dan, are you still there?
Yeah.
Holy man, alive.
That's pretty good.
What an amazing woman.
Mm-hmm.
Holy.
She is. She's very, you know, it's interesting that this knowledge about this illness has been around for a really long time. In 1862, there was Dr. Wright who noted that cannabis was excellent for relieving nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. And he even noted a case of what must have been hypermesis gravidarum. He said his patient was, quote, suffering to an extent that threatened death with vomiting. And none of his traditional remedies worked. And then he treated with cannabis, and the illness retreated immediately.
Well, just the thalidomide thing, man. Good point. Holy, here we are treating women with morning sickness that deforms the babies when there's a completely safe, no side effect, herbal cure that's cheap.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
Oh, it just tortures me, but oh.
I know, I think this series on mothers and pregnancy is really excellent. I'm glad we're doing it.
I'm in the feminist aspect on the war on drugs. For me, it's just blowing my mind. These interviews are just, they're hitting so hard to home because the pharmaceutical industry killed my mom. And so I have a real, you know, heartache for women who have to suffer under pills and doctors and the medical system. So,
well, I'm not sure we'll be able to stick with the pregnancy theme for much longer because it is rather focused. And I'm not too sure how many more women will be able to get to come on the show to do that. But we'll definitely do another couple of shows on women and
feminists, feminist women, the matriarch, you know, the goddess culture. Just hearing her talk about the goddess was like my heart.
Yeah,
my heart.